So we're family first, and then profession.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you just can't take all your life. You got to give as well. Mm-hmm. And it's always sort of been my philosophy. You get back in with interest compounded, really, anything that you give, if you do it in the right spirit. So I saw PBI, the Pennsylvania Bar Institute, as being a way to be able to give back to
what
my
exactly
profession.
Do they do, so we understand
okay.
How you're giving back?
This is the organization which presents continuing legal education to the profession all over the state of
mm-hmm.
Pennsylvania. They do it by actual live seminars.
Mm-hmm.
They do it by video that has been recorded of some of the live seminars.
Mm-hmm.
They do it by satellite transmission, which in effect comes out as video.
Right.
And what it is lawyers volunteer to be on these panels, workshop panels, to do the training.
Mm-hmm.
So all of that is basically contribution, and I did that. In the time I became a bank trust officer,
mm-hmm.
I was involved
mm-hmm.
in the fields that I was involved
in. Other words, you're helping young lawyers to develop
right.
themselves
exactly.
through education.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Plus, you're helping the older lawyers to keep up.
Yes, to maintain
their level of competence.
Right, right.
And there, it is now mandatory in Pennsylvania
yes.
that there be at least 12 credits
mm-hmm.
a year for any lawyer.
Mm-hmm. Now, what exactly is your position there? What do you
well, my
do?
Position as president of the organization was to, I work with, of course, a wonderful executive director.
Right.
His name is Roger Milton. And Roger had been there for years, and he is considered one of the leaders in the country. And I had the benefit of working with him. And they, you know, the day-to-day stuff is obviously handled by the organization, which in our case was over 60 people. I mean, these are paid everyday professionals, many of whom are lawyers.
Mm-hmm.
And when I took over, it was during my administration, which is only 1 year.
Mm-hmm.
We actually built a brand new building to accommodate this based on planning that went on before it when
mm-hmm.
I was serving on the executive committee.
Yes.
We were going up the chairs, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
And we also, during that period of time, negotiated a very important merger with a competitive group
mm-hmm.
in Philadelphia. Which became part of our organization. They had been part of our organization, withdrew, couldn't make it on their own, so we brought them back in the fold, assuming a considerable financial obligations and risk in doing so, but it's worked out beautifully. But
where
we had
is
a negotiating.
The
building is in Mechanicsburg,
oh.
for which is out right outside of Harrisburg.
Right, I see.
And you pass it whenever you go by in the turnpike, you look over in this industrial park, park.
Mm-hmm.
You can see the building, and the Philadelphia operation occupies the floor of a big downtown
mm-hmm.
Building in Philadelphia,
mm-hmm.
and it's just working beautifully. So
mm-hmm.
those two things were part of that, and it just gave me a great deal of satisfaction.
Mm-hmm.
Back when I had. When we dedicated the building, we had a little dedication ceremony. I was president then. I got to give them what I called my Mechanicsburg address, which is sort of interesting because we're located on the Gettysburg Highway. So we played up the double entendre here.
So this is one of your achievements
yes.
and accomplishments that you are passing on to a new generation. As well as maintaining for an
right, I mean,
generation.
Obviously I had wonderful predecessors and I have wonderful successors
mm-hmm.
in this job as well, but the fact that I was selected for it and
right.
was given the opportunity to serve in.
Mm-hmm.
But my work as a judge, I think, is probably been, hopefully, will go down in history, if anything's going to go down in history, being the most significant contribution that I've been able to make.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, it was a job I got paid for. Had to get elected to it first. Getting elected, I guess, was a great source of pride.
Mm-hmm.
But to be able to do these things and to be recognized for them, and now that I've taken my retirement, as I was required to do when you hit age 70,
mm-hmm.
I'm still trying to continue to do what I've been doing and working with families, dysfunctional families, unfortunately, and most recently getting involved also in doing work with kids who have been, I saw kids in the course of doing custody cases. I now am being exposed to their problems of children who are growing up who are dependent and neglected.
Mm-hmm.
The kind of people that children and youth and families
right.
look after
right.
and you as a social worker can
right.
appreciate the nature of that kind of work,
yeah.
which is not much desired by many people, unfortunately. Mm-hmm.
It's a difficult area. That's
very difficult area. You're dealing with crisis situations.
All the time. Now you say you're retired.
In under the law, the Constitution, in fact, of the state,
mm-hmm.
a judge is not permitted to serve as in an elected position after he or she attains the age of 70.
Yes.
And that's what happened in August.
Mm-hmm.
So how did these other responsibilities continue then?
You also can get appointed as a senior judge if your president judge feels that your services are needed in the community. And so there's just an incredible need for people in this particular area. Unfortunately, most judges would prefer not to do family law,
mm-hmm.
and so they've asked me to continue to basically do what I've been doing.
So you are a senior judge now?
I've been a senior judge since August.
I see. So
I've been a senior judge since you started interviewing.
Yes. No, so you're able to do these areas, continue in these areas.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
So, and as I say,
indefinitely?
No, not indefinitely. It would be as long as they feel that they can use me.
I see.
So I'm really at the will of
the president judge.
Yeah, the president judge or, mm-hmm. or the chief justice of the Supreme Court.
I see.
Who,
Pennsylvania?
Yeah, Pennsylvania.
I see. Who is that man?
That's a Pittsburgher, John P. Flaherty.
Yeah, I see.
Another one of the Flaherty clan, although not related, I don't believe. But that name has gotten people a lot of mileage in this town.
So, tell me another part of this. In retrospect, are there things that you would have done differently as you think back, that you wish you could have handled differently, changed in whatever area of your profession?
That's a good question, too, and I've asked myself that.
Mm-hmm.
I've asked Natalie that. What would we have done differently?
Right.
We've had the opportunity to do that
right.
in our total lives.
That's right.
And one thought that came to mind early on was when I was in the service and I had an opportunity to serve overseas,
mm-hmm.
like maybe going to Germany or something.
Right,
like that.
I remember.
That might have been interesting to have taken advantage of that, maybe
yeah.
down with the O'Connors.
Yes, I remember you said they went.
Yeah, but who knows? We also
mm-hmm.
had a wonderful experience being in Washington and gave us
right.
a chance to build up a relationship with Natalie's aunt and uncle who were
mm-hmm.
there and made those connections for whatever they were worth. It's pretty tenuous.
That's interesting, Larry, that because your sense of relating to others has always been very important, and now you point out that though you didn't go to Germany, it might have been a nice experience. it gave you an opportunity to build up a relationship
yeah. right.
in
yeah.
Washington.
Right. And with the other friends that we were there.
Yes. Yes.
Remember I talked about the Handmakers,
mm-hmm.
who
mm-hmm.
we were very close
right.
to at that
right.
time, and we haven't been able to, because of distance and so forth, haven't been able to keep up the relationship maybe we would like
right.
to, but we haven't forgotten each other,
right.
and we all know we're there. If,
right.
If every
right.
opportunity would mm-hmm. present itself.
Would there be anything in the course of
I'm trying to think in the course of my law profession, would I have done
right.
something different?
Well, you wish
it's
you would have...
It's conceivable that I could have ended up in a law firm where I could have ended up making a lot more money.
Oh, yes. Mm-hmm.
But that was never important to me.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think Natalie resented that either. The fact that... it's possible in this profession to make lots of money. I was okay.
Mm-hmm.
I was totally self-sufficient.
Right.
I never got a handout from anyone.
Mm-hmm.
Natalie never got a handout from
mm-hmm.
anyone. I mean, you know, our parents had passed away and maybe, you know, they had an insurance policy and you were the beneficiary.
Right.
Which, but yeah, it was never big, big money or anything like that. So whatever we've been able to do, we've pretty much done together and we never felt that we were cheated out of anything or that someone owed us something or that fate paid us some kind of a cruel trick but
mm-hmm.
for something we could have done all of these things. In fact, the way we've looked at our lives, both of us, is that literally every cloud had a silver lining. If something went wrong, or it wasn't exactly the way we would have wanted it, we went on to something else that turned out to be better.
Mm-hmm.
Natalie certainly did that with her career.
But with your career...
Mine was a little different.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
And I guess there may have been a certain amount of luck. I sort of went into this idea of becoming a judge. As I said, the practice was going along okay. We, at that time, our senior partner was Sam Kaufman. His son, Gerald, had gone off to the legislature and then subsequently went elsewhere
mm-hmm.
rather than coming back to practice.
Mm-hmm.
So we were all like his kids,
mm-hmm.
the rest of us. And we tried to work out something that we thought was very fair for him if he should ever leave the practice
right.
to take care of his widow
mm-hmm.
and himself. But he of course was determined he was going to die with his boots on, and he did
mm-hmm.
eventually, very advanced in age. But there was a falling out, and this was going on about the time that I started to consider
the judgeship.
I was the sort of the manager of the firm, the office manager, and was sort of a peacemaker
mm-hmm.
in the middle.
Did you campaign for the judgeship?
Yeah, I had a campaign.
Oh, you did?
Oh, yeah. Oh, actively.
Mm-hmm.
I ran as a family man for Family Court.
I see.
Because I had gotten appointed. I had gotten the appointment from Milton Schaff.
I see.
I mean, I don't know if I've talked to you much about how that all came to pass. I don't know that I know.
How you became a judge.
How I became a judge.
Mm-hmm.
But just looking back, all I can say is, looking at the total thing and everything
yeah.
that's happened to us, we really couldn't come up with many regrets, and we couldn't think of very much that we'd have wanted to do differently, because we've asked each other that.
Because this is what, sometimes, now you campaign, that's why I asked you, did you campaign for judges? Sometimes you think you want to go into another area of your profession, and then when you get in there, it isn't what you anticipated would be, and
mm-hmm.
that's why I'm asking in terms of, did you have some second thoughts after that maybe I should have stayed in
yeah.
private practice?
No, that never happened.
Mm-hmm.
Never.
Mm-hmm.
Not for a heartbeat.
Mm-hmm.
My dilemma, if I were going to have it, was did I want to continue to stay on in the practice of law? That was the major decision that I had to make in my life at 49 years of age. Did I want to continue in this? I talked to you about some of the antagonism that was going on in the firm. There were aspects of the practice of law which sort of bothered me. This idea of having to keep track of your time and bill people for your time. I found it very confining to me. It was an accountability that I really wasn't prepared to really make. And so it started to occur to me, well, I'll tell you what happened the next event. I read Gail Sheedy's book, Passages.
Yes.
Passages 1, as it is known now.
Yes.
And in it, she talked about midlife crises, and she talked about changing the direction of your life. So I was thinking to myself, my goodness, I have this incredible investment in the field of law, and I have this training to be a lawyer, and I like it. I mean, I like sort of the discipline of it, and what's involved, and the responsibility that you have for other people's lives, and how you can help them in this regard, and how as a lawyer you also have training that you can help in the community, and so forth. And so, how can I just give this up? And then it occurred to me that, well, maybe you don't really have to give it up. There's other aspects of the law. Would you like to be a judge? And I started thinking about that. And the more I thought about it, the more the idea appealed to me. Because I know kids now that go to law school with the idea they want to be a judge. Never thought about that. Like it was something I didn't want to do. And with that, this is coupled also with my desire for public service. And here, this sort of solved both things. So I actively thought about that. I talked to a few people that were involved. Some people in the Jewish community that I thought could do me some good at the time, because you had to raise money to do this. And I went on a trip. I was a delegate, along with Natalie. She became a delegate, too, for the Union of American Hebrew Congregations convention out they had a biennial convention out in San Francisco. It was our 25th wedding anniversary. It was coming up at that time, and we thought that would be a good way to go out and have a trip and be a delegate and participate in something that we were interested in. And I was thinking about this very seriously at that particular time. The judgeship. Talked about it with Natalie. Never even mentioned to anyone in my firm. But yet, when that trip was over, we sort of said,
"She's a good idea."
And how did Schaap play into that?
Well, he was governor.
I see. Mm-hmm.
So what I wanted to do was to try to get the governor to appoint to the job, and that way I thought I'd have a leg up if I was already serving as a judge, and we could do that. I had to work on that. They had what they called a trial court nominating commission, and in that position, you had to be approved, and then the Bar Association also had a judiciary committee that had to interview you and recommend you and so forth. And so I was able to get these recommendations, and then I was invited up to meet with the governor. And I guess he liked me, I had sort of an in, because one of his counsel was a young Pittsburgher, a lawyer, who I got to know and knew of me, because I guess my activities in the community, and even with the Bar Association, because I tried to get active there, and as a result, he appointed me. He had a choice. There were three positions open. So nine names were given to him by the trial court nominating commission, from which there was three for each position, and he had to select three.
I see. You were one.
And I was one of the ones he selected. He had selected another Republican because he thought he should have some balance.
Yes.
Who had already served as a judge but not gotten elected, and he reappointed him. And then there was another lawyer who was a well-known practitioner, Bob Grigsby, and he appointed him. So we were the three that were named. But and this is where politics started to really come into it. We could not get confirmed by the Senate, which is what you have to do, because it was being blocked because a couple of people that they thought should have been appointed were not appointed. One of whom was Leonard Stacy, who had been a state senator and was a commissioner of Allegheny County and blind.
Yes.
And the and so that was one of the main things. It had run with Shaq. When he first ran, it was Stacy. It was Shap Stacy. They ran as a team. Stacy was going to be the lieutenant governor.
Right.
And they evidently had a falling out. And so that enmity that was there. I'm the middle of this. Mm-hmm. So the. So then there were three more other spaces that opened up, but he still refused to appoint to. Stacy, and Stacy ran on his own, but the other three people who got appointed and ultimately approved were Gene Strasburger, who I recommend you interview eventually in the course of this, although he's a number of years early. He was 34 at that time. I was 49, he was 34. Ralph Cappy, who was 34 at that time, is now the number two justice of the Supreme Court of Pennsylvania, and Joe Del Sol, who is on the Superior Court of Pennsylvania and has run for Supreme Court and should have been elected, but for, once again, policy.
So you were really in the middle of a lot of political back and forth.
Yeah, the people
but you still had to campaign, even though
I had a campaign. I had a campaign, and ultimately what happened is we had these six judges that the governor had appointed and that were confirmed, which included Colbert and Grigsby. Colbert and Grigsby did not get elected at the end of the campaign. And the two judges who did get elected were Stacy and Zappala. Zappala went on to become a Supreme Court justice and still is. And Stacy became the first blind judge in Pennsylvania. And here are all of us at a picture that we took in later years when we were up at Hershey for a meeting, and that's all six of us.
Yes.
So
you were one of those who was elected by the community after you.
Yeah. What happened is running in we just went through this endorsement meeting that they talked about, and. I, of course, was a relative unknown. I was not really involved in politics, although I'd been a committee person for some 6 years in the Democratic Party, so it wasn't like I hadn't paid my dues somewhere along the line. And it was very important to get the Democratic endorsement. And
that must have been a whole new experience for you, too.
Absolutely, and for my wife. So I mean, I had to go around and we'd go and talk at different fire halls and veterans of foreign war, libraries and, you know, at all of these local political groups. And you've got to remember that Pittsburgh, or Allegheny County, has 130 municipalities.
Oh, so you
and every one of them had their own Democratic committee and their own Republican committee. And in the city of Pittsburgh, every ward had its own Democratic committee and so forth. So that was the problem. Plus, you're campaigning in a county that's bigger than the state of Delaware.
Now, just let me ask you something before we stop. When you were campaigning, were you still a member of your law group?
No, I was a judge. I got appointed judge.
No.
So I was, wait, I was appointed judge.
Yeah.
I'm serving as judge, and now I got a campaign.
Oh. How long is your term from the appointment?
The term is until the next municipal election. So I was appointed and sworn in on June 30th of 1978.
Yes.
The next municipal election was going to be in 79. Mm. In so the primary was in May mm-hmm. of 79, 20 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And the general election was in November. Now, what happened, as judges, you could cross-file. You could run as a Republican as well as a Democrat.
Right.
And all of us who ran at that time, and there were like 12, mm-hmm. There were six on the Republican
right.
side and six on the Democratic side, we all had cross-filed. So we were able to run on both right. tickets, mm-hmm. and I did. Four of the six of us that ran, in the picture that I showed you
yes.
here, got the nomination on both parties.
Oh.
The only two that didn't on the Democratic side were Larry Kaplan and Ralph Caffey. So our election was not a foregone conclusion. For the other four, it was.
Ah, I see.
So we ended up running against, basically, Bill Colbert, who was the Republican mm-hmm. that Schaap had nominated.
Mm-hmm.
And all of a sudden I got a mental block.
Let me ask him, could you have been put out if you didn't get the...
Yeah.
You were already a judge and you had a
yeah,
campaign.
My term would have been... I would have lost. I'd have been out of office.
Wow.
I would have been out of office.
You would have been in trouble.
No, I'd have gone back to practicing law.
Yeah, but not with the same firm because you weren't...
Well, maybe, maybe not. By then, the firm had broken up.
Ah, I see. Mm-hmm.
They had broken up. And, yeah. and what happened was there was a the new firm was Titus, Marcus, and Shapira. Dan Shapira had joined them at that time.
Yes,
subsequently, Titus and Marcus and Shapira broke up. So Titus went and has his big firm, and Marcus and Shapira, of course, we know they are having their firm. In fact, they're being honored by Israel Bonds next month.
Now, once you campaigned and you were put definitely in the judgeship, okay?
Right. Once I got elected.
Now, how long, now that was...
That was for a 10-year. That was for 10 years.
I see.
And then at the end of 10 years, they have what they call a retention election.
Uh-huh.
Where on the ballot appears, and both parties get the vote
right.
for this, should Lawrence Kaplan be retained as a judge of the Court of Common Pleas of Allegheny County?
And the community votes.
Vote yes or no. And inevitably, the vote is... there's always a no vote that ranges anywhere
right.
from 20% to 30%.
Mm-hmm.
So mine was on the low side, but I got that number of people
oh,
voting that I shouldn't be retained. Obviously, in my position as a family court judge, where no one wins.
A lot of, that's right.
No
lot
one
of
wins.
Hostility.
A lot of hostility.
Right.
So I would expect
yeah,
that. But there's never been a judge in Allegheny County that hasn't been retained, that has run for retention.
Mm-hmm.
There have been in other counties, usually small counties,
mm-hmm.
although it did happen in Philadelphia, but the guy was always a crook, so
yeah,
they weren't
right,
going to vote for
right,
him.
Right.
But
that's an interesting thing. So your next 10 years...
And I've got elected for another 10 years.
Yeah, but now, at the end, at 70...
I went out, right.
Suppose you hadn't reached the age of 70.
I would have a retention election coming up in November.
Again.
This year in November.
I see. So
right.
now you don't have to worry about
right.
that.
Right, exactly.
I see. That's interesting.
Judge Kaplan, do you run again for the retention?
Yes. You run,
so you
but
do
you
a
don't
campaign.
Run.
If she
oh,
has.
Yeah, you do. Well, let's put it this way. There's an excuse to campaign if you want, and you can go out, because normally judges can't get involved once they're
right.
sitting judge, except for their own election. That's the
right.
only way that they're allowed to get
right.
involved. You can't get involved otherwise. And in fact, we're prohibited from going to any kind of political gatherings
mm-hmm.
and things of that nature,
oh, really?
Or political fundraisers.
Uh-huh.
We can't go. I guess our wives can.
Yeah, right.
But even there, you got to be careful.
Mm-hmm.
So
But you would just have had to go through the whole thing if you had
the retention. But happily, what they do for a retention election, the Bar Association sponsors your retention. And they ask you to make a contribution to help them with their
right.
work.
But it was very modest,
yeah,
I think.
Amount.
Compared to what a campaign would be.
Right. Oh, yes.
And I know that, so, and it's almost a foregone conclusion.
Right.
And so it really didn't take any time away from my work
mm-hmm.
or anything like
good.
That.
Good.
But running a campaign was a lot, you know, and the Jewish community was very good to me.
Mm-hmm.
I was able, the way I ran my campaign, I figured
mm-hmm.
you're Jewish, you
yeah.
play it to the hilt.
Right.
And I got committees at all the major congregations.
I was just going to say, you were a contributing member to the Jewish community with
yeah.
the various organizations that you helped out, including
yeah.
Yad Shalom.
Yeah. And so we got committees at each, and they then wrote to
mm-hmm.
their membership.
Right, to endorse you.
Yeah, but it wasn't done officially or on
the
congregational letterhead
right.
or anything like that. But they were writing to these people as fellow congregants.
Right.
So, you know, I'd had like a committee in each congregation. And I got contributions, you know, they were $5, $10, $25, maybe some,
very nice.
As much as $100. I raised